Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers, and I'd like to introduce Lee Cantor, our executive producer, to introduce our sponsors.
Sure. Today's show is sponsored by Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, project-based consulting, and permanent placement. Visit their website, DelaneyLLC.com, and learn why 100% of Delaney's clients describe them as outstanding and excellent.
This week's CFO news comes today from CFO.com. There's been an announcement that the chairman, Mary Shapiro, of the SEC, would spend $1.3 billion. The news announcement says that a 12% increase in the Securities and Exchange Commission's budget would enable the regulator to hire 370-plus more employees, some of whom would work for the corporate finance enforcement divisions, and SEC Chairman Mary Shapiro today. And those of us in the CFO capacity, gosh, my goodness, do we all welcome more regulators. And with that, I'll turn to David Schenk. David, thank you very much. Welcome to the show. We appreciate you taking place with us today.
Thank you.
Now, David, you've served in some very senior roles as Senior Vice President and Chief Accounting Officer in several companies at NDC Health and Blaze Metals. Tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into the whole accounting and finance world, and what made you choose the path to the CFO?
The accounting and finance world was an interesting start for me in that it was described as organized math. And it sounded like something I'd be very interested in doing. So 30-plus years later, I'm still doing it.
So when you were very young, were you very numerate? Did you enjoy the mathematics?
I enjoyed mathematics, and I thought I would want to start out being an architect. So I'm very design and structured.
Interesting. So design and structure, does that by its nature tend you to look to the forward thinking rather than the backward rear view of finance?
Both.
Now, help us understand, has that always been a point of your career? Have you always started with that both angles? People tend to find that they choose one versus the other. Have you always had a foot in both camps?
I've actually had a circular approach in that I view the way I look at the business like a lighthouse. So I'm constantly circling, trying to look at all angles and all directions to ensure nothing is going to catch us by surprise.
Interesting. And where do you see that circular angle taking you in terms of today, that forward-looking, that rear view? Is it still as prevalent today as it was 30 years ago for you?
It's still prevalent today, but I think in today's economy, looking forward is critical.
So help us understand, has the last 2 years and the credit crunch impacted that forward-looking view?
I think it's made it much more difficult for senior financial officers. The impact of the economy, the impact of pending healthcare legislation, you know, jobs, everything is causing havoc, and it makes it much more difficult for the finance executives of today to plan and forecast where they should take their companies.
Have the actual activities surrounding data gathering changed? Is it that the way in which you measure activities of the company has changed, or is it something else?
I think it's very important that the company is aware of what their space is doing, how the competitors are performing, and how their own company is performing. And that should be driven by business metrics as far as, you know, the non-financial measures that help guide the company in its investment decisions.
And those non-financial measures, talk to us a little bit about that. Perhaps let's pick two elements of your career. They perhaps would provide different elements. At Blaze Metals, what particular financial metrics did you have to drive that business?
Blaze Metals was a recycling business focused on metal. The largest item that we had was steel. So we processed steel in that we shredded automobiles and appliances and then sold the shredded metals to the major steel mills.
And were those typically U.S.-based, or was that involving international markets?
There were some international markets for the non-ferrous metals, but the steel was primarily in the Southeast, primarily because of the cost of freight to move the product. Once the housing market and the automobile markets retracted, then the impact on the recycling business had a drastic downturn. We saw prices of shredded steel go from $550 a gross ton in the summer of 2008 to under $100 a ton by the fourth quarter of 2008.
Wow, so clearly the you couldn't see that coming. That's the train that's literally coming at you with the headlights on. How do you get through that?
Very carefully. Our operational management saw this coming and took extremely rapid actions to decrease the workforce by more than half. So we went through rapid layoffs in the October-November 2008 timeframe and considerably shrunk the size of our fixed cost. The raw material cost varies with what the markets are doing, so they naturally trended down.
And did you have any futures, forward contracts, or was it relatively short-term contracts for both the purchase and the sale?
Very short-term contracts. We tended to turn inventory 25 to 40 times a year. So we did not hedge any commitments on a prospective basis because we had very low and rapidly turning levels of inventory.
And is that typical within the scrap metal business?
In general, yes.
Interesting. A lot of the metal business from the first time, perhaps, creation of the metal tends to be more the longer term hedging of contracts, both sale and purchase. Interesting that once that car has been produced or that metal beer can has been produced, second time around when perhaps the Ferrari becomes a Toyota, it's a little bit of a different game.
Yes. It's a much more complex game as far as trying to balance supply and demand.
Now, talk, is that the same as in NDC Health? You're talking about health services rather than a product. Talk to us about the differences in terms of that forward-looking and impact of the CFO role in that regard.
NDC Health was a transaction processing company where we processed pharmacy, hospital, and physician claims. So the forward-looking piece was more based on government issues, like pending legislation now with healthcare would have a significant impact on that. We were not very economically driven in that whether the economy is up or down, people need prescriptions, they need medical care when they need it. The cost, as everyone knows, have been running away for a long time. Our focus was on the back office operations and really trying to reduce the overhead cost, the administrative cost for providing health care.
And in the same regard, in terms of us seeing those benefit costs to the average consumer escalating, did you have escalating costs in terms of your component of the business?
We had large data centers that were fixed cost in nature, so we were able to leverage our fixed cost investment with some upgrades for technology for additional capacity.
But is the health business becoming more technology-oriented? You've mentioned there a couple of times the focus in terms of technology.
One of the challenges healthcare has is that the physician still tends to like to write their prescriptions. That creates problems because so many drugs look alike and sound alike. And we actually had tests built into our pharmacy processing that could check for those types of look-alike, sound-alike drugs, so that if you had a prescription for a heart medicine, but the pharmacist was reading it as if it was for a different part of the body, you could have an edit check that would validate whether that prescription was being read properly.
So in terms of the CFO role, we often tend to look at forward-looking aspects, also including elements of risk, risk aversion, contingency planning. Does that bring into the business that you were in more of a reserve focus mind on the balance sheet?
Now, the balance sheet, primary assets in the balance sheet were receivables, and they tended to not have too much risk associated with it because we were primarily dealing with the major pharmaceutical chains, hospital chains, and big pharma. So we were very fortunate we had very little in the way of bad debt issues, so bad debt reserves were low. We did not maintain any inventory. So there was not a lot of risk in the balance sheet.
Explain to us, if you would, for those listeners that perhaps are not aware, how the balance sheet from a short-term to long-term, from a debt-to-equity component, is different in that health, environment, and industry versus the traditional, maybe more product manufacturing-oriented.
We had a fair amount of debt, primarily due to acquisition activity. We were fairly active in acquiring companies, both domestically and internationally. So the debt we had was not so much from operations and expansion and growth, but just from corporate M&A activity.
Interesting that you talk about M&A activity and the impact of that on the healthcare business. We've had discussions over the months we've been doing the show with many CFOs that talk about merger and acquisition, takeover, the focus of value on the business. Talk to us as it impacts your life as in the role of the CFO. How does that M&A activity change your role?
It can have a fairly dramatic impact depending on just how active you want to be in the development market. It'll put a strain on the finance operation in that whatever you buy has to be integrated to your current infrastructure. So whether it's your financial systems, your people, the integration piece on the back end is very important.
Now, how do you operationally manage that? Is that part of your due diligence process?
It has to, a plan needs to be developed as you're going through due diligence of how you're going to integrate it or whether you're going to integrate it. You may choose to leave something on a standalone basis and defer integration to a future point.
And now why would you do that?
Depending on the cost and the complexity.
The cost of obtaining that integrated financial ERP system, would you potentially do that if you wanted to keep the company maintained separately, maybe for future sale or some other operational reason?
Yes, those would all be considerations that would go into the thought process.
Now, what is the companies that you've been in that have been highly acquisitive, have they chosen to integrate or have they chosen not to?
At NDC Health, that was a company that had grown by a series of acquisitions. As Y2K was coming up, going back in history, we took an inventory of our financial systems in the current state, and we had in excess of 100 different platforms running our healthcare businesses.
Wow, 100 different platforms. My career includes about 4 years when I was part of the WorldCom team, and we had 60 billing platforms, 60-something, in fact. I've not heard of a company that has 100. How did you manage that?
Not well, which is why we went ahead and went through the RFP process and ended up selecting Oracle as a solution, and went through a two-stage process to implement Oracle, which provided the additional benefit that we could centralize most of our financial operations here in Atlanta.
Key point there, you centralized most of them. How many of those 100 discrete systems did you capture into that one?
By the time we were done, Oracle was solving all our business problems other than we had a loss in payroll solution.
Oh, interesting. So it was capturing all the financial elements, and then that loss and payroll system would have just been a subledger with an integration.
Yes.
Interesting. So you went from what I can only assume was Excel hell into some kind of a consolidation through automation.
Yes.
So what did that do to your finance function?
Well, it enabled us to, one, enhance control. We had a centralized purchasing and payables group, which made forecasting and treasury operations easy to manage.
Did you physically relocate people to that centralized?
We physically relocated a couple of senior people. Unfortunately, we let some of the people in our field operations go. And when the dust settled, we probably were able to reduce headcount by about 15% company-wide.
So did that help you offset the costs of the implementation of that large system?
Yes.
Was that actually part of your ROI calculation when you were looking at integrating?
Certainly.
Interesting, interesting. So where did you feel at the end of that integration as the chief accounting officer? Did you end up getting the data that you wanted? Was it a successful implementation?
It was successful. It was on time and under budget, which you can't ask for anything much better than that.
No, but I'm sure you learned some lessons. Were there any particular lessons that you learned from that that perhaps our listeners would like to hear?
We did it, as I said, in two phases. The first phase was general ledger, the purchasing, accounts payable, fixed assets, things that were pretty much within the control of the finance group, and we knew that we could be successful. We had to go from multiple chart of account designs into one standardized chart of accounts. So we had to think through the way the reporting information for the different business units would come out the back end to make sure we were thoughtful and careful on how we did the chart of account design on the front end. The second phase was the billing and revenue systems. We sold software as well as process transactions, so we had very complex multiple element software revenue recognition issues. And that project took more time and was much more complex due to the nature of it.
Was it the billing end or was it the receivables end that took the time?
It was the billing end.
So explain to us a little bit more about that. What particularly was it the elements of the chart of accounts? Perhaps, for example, what is the definition of a customer? Was it those kind of data element problems?
It wasn't those data element problems. It was more we had operational systems that created the processing transactions, and we had to interface transaction counts out of operating systems to get them into the billing system.
And then, of course, the customer is getting a bill from a different system.
They're getting a bill from a different system. A lot of customers wanted customized statements to help them allocate costs underneath the bills. So we had to design some customized solutions for certain customers. And throughout the process, what happened, you talk about a lesson learned, it took a significant focus for an extended period of time, and during that period of time, we actually let our receivables grow. So
took your eye off the balance sheet, huh?
Yes. So then we had to play catch-up, That was challenging, but we worked through it and did not incur any significant operating losses.
Now, had you had that time over again today, would you potentially maybe bring in some part-time people to be able to help keep your eye, maybe outsource the collections activities? Would there be something that you might recommend?
Yes, I would recommend keeping the collection activity segregated and focused.
Now, when you emerged and you went through and you had to do that catch-up, talk to us as to what impact that was for the CFO role, for the accountants and the analysts and the collections agents.
The impact was mostly centered in just a few individuals that were actually doing the collection work. So the accounting staff and the rest of the analysts and people were not impacted.
Now, through that, though, you've now implemented Oracle. You've now got 100 discrete systems, now down to one. Was your life as the head of that function better? Did you get more improved reporting?
We got improved reporting. We got faster reporting. We got more consistent reporting.
Was it more accurate?
Accuracy was improved. The timeliness was improved. Our ability to improve the transparency in our SEC filings was improved.
So how did that help your MD&A, for example, management discussion and analysis? Did you have more data points? Was it perhaps that you had the data earlier, so now you could really take more time to analyze it? Talk to us about that.
Yeah, there was improved time for analysis, and we also, over the few years, modified substantially the way we approached MD&A. And some of that was driven by outside learning, outside benchmarking, and just a more robust, transparent amount of data that we shared with shareholders. We went through and we took our top five areas of cost and took those components of cost and reflected them in the statements on a comparative basis.
And now you've talked about the standard chart of accounts. Did that help you to get that further detail of costs across the business?
It enabled us to do that and to get it on a more consistent basis.
Wonderful. So your role as the CFO perhaps improved?
Yes. It made things a little bit easier.
That's neat. That's always nice to see. So often the CFO role is playing catch-up, and it's good to see that life can get better. Let me ask you a little bit in terms of that. What was a sizable two-year integration of multiple billing platforms? You talked about going through an RFP process. Did you use an outside partner to help you through that business process redesign? Talk to us a little bit about how you work through that. What is a megalith project to take on?
Yes, we did use outside consultants to help us. and the company had already made a commitment to Lawson from a payroll and human resource database solution, and our technology people thought that we would probably just simply go with Lawson. We chose to look at Oracle as an alternative and went through an exhaustive 3 to 5 month series of demonstrations and tests with representatives from the finance group from all our business units participating. And when we came down to a final decision, Oracle was a clear winner.
So what was the, were there one or two key deciding criteria for you in the business and the finance function, perhaps more prominently from the business, that created, let's just say product one versus product two versus product three, were there particular criteria that it came down to for you?
The simple criteria was that the one that we went with was a much more integrated package with one vendor solution. Lawson had a series of solutions that involved business partners, and when you ask the question, if something's not working, do we come to you, do we go to your partner, what's the answer for that? The message we got was kind of a mixed message.
Interesting. So that also plays into the risk element of your role.
Yes.
Stability and potential impact down the road.
Yeah, we were looking for one solution.
Now, how did it impact, let's say, the staff accountant or the staff analyst? Did they now have better tools to be able to drill down?
Yes, they had better tools to drill down. It made everybody more productive. But it did come with a cost. When I joined the company, we had one person devoted to financial systems. And upon inquiry, we found that his definition of what his span of control was that if it was inside of 285, he dealt with it, and if it was outside of 285, he did not, which we found.
And for those listeners that are not from Atlanta, we're talking about a circular ring road, if you will, around about Atlanta called I-285.
Yes. After we got Oracle put in and Lawson was in for the payroll solution, we ultimately had a financial systems staff of approximately 20.
Wow, 1 to 20. Now, did your system integrator or your software provider guide you that that was going to be the level of increase?
No, it basically evolved over time. Once we had the systems in place and people could understand the data that we could get, there were more and more requests for custom reports and other kinds of uses of the system.
So really that was to serve your customer base, if you will, your internal customer base. Now the accounting and finance function was actually giving help?
Yes.
Wow.
It was a win-win.
Win-win for all. That's a very strong success story. Thank you very much, David. Let me take the conversation, if I can, to challenges that today's CFO faces. Perhaps one challenge that I would ask in the form of a question is, does the CFO have the ear, or if you will, the respect from the operations and the different business units to be able to handle all those data elements and the role?
That's a very interesting question, and that it largely depends, I think, on the specific individual and the company culture. The role of the CFO is becoming so broad in today's world. They tend to get involved in so many different things. You really need an individual who's very outgoing and is a strong communicator that also has the credibility with the operating people versus the old prototype accountant with the eye shade.
So credibility with the operations, should the CFO of tomorrow perhaps do a little bit of kicking the tires and be in sales for a short time, be in marketing, be in human resources, would that lend some of that credibility you're talking about?
That'd be one avenue to pursue. I think the main thing is to really understand what the business operations are doing. What their strategies are, what the drivers of the business are, what the metrics are. And if the CFO, I think, has a good staff underneath him that can take care of the day-to-day accounting and reporting and fundamental transactional processing things, that frees up time for that person to then spend more time with the chief operating officer and the business heads.
So in terms of your career as it has spanned, has your role in the early portions of your career changed to what it is today? Are you more that communicator? Are you more physically visiting places?
Yeah, the old adage, management by walking around. And I think it's important for the CFO to, whether it's within the office or across the company, get on the plane and go out and see the operations and be visible to the people. You know, there's still some mystery about accounting that it's kind of a black box or it's voodoo or something else that we do.
And yeah, it's that secret that we CFO role people keep to ourselves. We don't let anyone else know the rules.
Yeah, I think the good CFO will try and demystify that, you know, whether it's in training classes or whatever. And I think it's important as the rules change for the CFO to be communicating on a prospective basis how that's going to impact the business.
Is that the main challenge of today's CFO?
That's one of the challenges. CFOs have plenty of challenges.
What are the key challenges, would you say, that would concern today's CFO?
Well, the CFO is becoming more and more visible, I think, to the board. The CFO is becoming more, we've talked for years about being a business partner to the CEO. You're starting to see the role of chief operating officers and presidents get diminished, and the CFOs, I think, becoming more visible. So that brings its own set of challenges as far as acceptance within the corporate culture and respect. That's all driven, again, by the person that's holding the chair.
So is tomorrow's CEO or president likely to come from the CFO ranks?
There's a trend that says that that is potentially going to happen, although it's slow in coming. But I think the CFO is becoming a broader-based business person than just the accounting and planning functions of the past.
That's very unique, very interesting. The experiences and the education perhaps don't lend itself to that.
In the past, I'd say that's true. I think the CFOs are becoming more well-rounded as far as total business.
Do you see in the realms of you staying technical, your peers, is the training and the education and the outside of work events that you go to maintain your knowledge base, are they becoming less accounting or finance oriented, leaving that to your tactical controllership function and maybe more broad?
I think it depends if the CFO is a CPA and they're required to get a certain level of continuing education, depending on what state they're in, that'll drive that some of the education does have to stay technical as far as the accounting goes. But if you're a CFO that's not a CPA, then I think you're open to much more range as far as the extent of education that you can pursue.
And in that regard, very often the CFO may or may not have that CPA credential, may or may not have come through the accounting side. There is a whole host of CFOs that come from typically that finance function, having the debt, the equity, the more balance sheet, the value-based function. Talk to us a little bit in terms of your roles and experiences in that financial planning analysis and value-based world.
It's really, yeah, I'm a traditional accountant by training.
So you came through that CPA rank?
I came through the CPA rank. I was in public accounting with a couple of the big four firms for about 11 years. Got out into industry and have been in industry for 20-plus years in several different roles, both public and private companies, at the corporate level, the divisional level. And the role of the CFO, yeah, we went through a phase a few years ago with SOX that I think there was probably a tendency for companies to want to have a CPA to be the CFO just because it was a safety point that they could check off from an insurance perspective.
Is that still being asked for today?
I think it's probably shifting back to the way it was before.
The SOX. More operational CFO?
Operational CFOs, you know, people coming up through treasury and investment banking and especially in today's world with the way the economy is, understanding the broader pictures beyond just accounting is critical.
So let me ask you then, in terms of as we look forward to the next millennium, what is that role for the CFO going to be? You've seen an evolution through your career. Do you have any foresight?
I think it's just going to get harder and harder. And a lot of that has to do with the way management information flows. As the world evolves, the world is spinning faster and faster, the world is shrinking. Globalization, the speed of data, the speed of information, the patience that people have to wait for information is getting shorter and shorter. So the nimbleness of the CFO and the ability to span an ever-increasing wide range of subjects, cultures, travel, everything is just making it much more complex and at a faster pace.
Challenge, we've talked a lot about that. We've talked a lot about the changing role of the CFO. We have a tradition on the show to ask our guests a CFO tip of the month. What's yours?
The thought I'd have is it's really around communications. The CFO has to be someone who's outgoing, who's approachable, who's visible. You cannot be the policeman anymore, kind of the guy who says no. If you try and take that role, operations is not going to work well with you. So I think you really need to be very open and focused on the business. I mentioned earlier about management by walking around, visibility, being out in the operations, talking to the operating people, understanding the business drivers that affect the way sales contracts get written, the way costs are managed, the way headcount planning is done, the way capital projects are approached, the need for capital. The CFO has to marshal and help influence decisions around which projects get approved and which projects don't get approved.
So clearly communication is key in the role of the CFO.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much. To the listeners, thank you very much to David Schenk. David, we very much appreciate you've got a tremendous career, and thank you very much for sharing your innermost thoughts of the role of the CFO. Thank you also to our contributors, CFO.com, for the news item, and thank you very much to our sponsor, Delaney Consulting, providing interim and permanent financial staff to companies. For more information about Delaney, go to www.delaneyllc.com. And thank you to our listeners for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time, this and other thought leadership about today's CFO is available from your computer at www.cforadio.com.